When you're phenotyping, it really helps listen to some fast-paced music. It makes you go a little bit faster. My name is Adam D'Angelo. I'm a senior at Rutgers University in New Jersey, double majoring in plant science and agriculture and food systems, and double minoring in agroecology and music.
Adam, you're a hazelnut breeder. I've never met a hazelnut breeder before, but before we get to that, I'd like to talk a little bit about your music. Specifically, you play bluegrass music. Tell me a little bit about that. When did you start playing bluegrass music? Why do you like it so much? And what's the extent of your involvement in it?
Sure. So I was playing guitar for a very long time, but I got a banjo in senior year of high school. And that was fun. And I always tell people to get good at bluegrass, you have to listen to a lot of bluegrass. And I didn't start listening to a lot of bluegrass until I started working in my lab. When you're phenotyping, it really helps listen to some fast-paced music. It makes you go a little bit faster. So I was listening to a lot of bluegrass, and I started playing more, joined a few societies around the state. I'm in the New Jersey Bluegrass and Old Time Music Association. So it's been a great way to meet people with similar interests and meet a whole bunch of new people in new places.
Might seem like an odd question, but does playing bluegrass music or music in general, does it influence your work with plant breeding at all?
It certainly helps that a lot of the songs are about agriculture. They're kind of either about farming, women, or dying, or some combination of the three. So pretty simple song structures, but it's been nice. It's been a good way to connect with people when I'm in other parts of the country, and it's gotten me to see a lot of the world, actually.
Moving to hazelnuts, how did you first get involved working with hazelnuts? What made you want to do that?
So when I got to Rutgers, I started looking around at the different programs that were there, and one that really struck me was the hazelnut program. First of all, they're an undeveloped crop, so they were making huge advances really quickly. They were doing a bunch of novel research. They had plots everywhere. Wherever you went, you saw hazelnut trees growing. And then eventually someone I was living with, he was in that lab, so he got my foot in the door, and I worked with them for 2 years just as a field technician, and now I'm actually doing a senior honors thesis with them.
What's the most common question you get in regards to hazelnuts?
So the most common things that happen, well, when I tell them that I study hazelnuts, they usually just sort of say Nutella. And if it doesn't have an upward inflection, the response is, yeah, Nutella. But if it does have an upward inflection or they follow it with a question, then usually I'll tell them that, yes, Nutella consumes, well, really Ferrero Rocher, the company that owns Nutella, buys up most of the world's hazelnut crop. They're certainly looking for more production, but they're really looking for domestic production here in the United States. So they're really interested in helping us with our program. They've helped us develop our parameters and the things that we're looking for, and they're definitely going to be a big consumer of the product once it's finished.
Yeah, I have to say I love Nutella as well, and that's a key ingredient is hazelnuts. And well, your research, tell me a little bit about your research and why it's important to the hazelnut industry. What are you looking at, and why does it matter to big companies like Ferrero Rocher?
Sure. So the main thing that we're looking at in my lab is resistance to the Eastern Filbert Blight, EFB. So that is indigenous to the eastern side of the United States, but in the late 1960s, someone vectored that over to Oregon. So Oregon is where most of the U.S. production is for hazelnuts, and EFB was not over there forever because it couldn't cross the Rocky Mountains or the plains. It was sort of trapped on the eastern side of the United States. But once it was vectored over there, it swept through all the orchards. It killed a lot of the trees, and it just left one sort of tree. It was an obsolete pollinizer called the Gassaway tree. And OSU, Oregon State University, they were really quick to use that. It was a simple Mendelian inheritance resistance trait. It was dominant, so they could breed, cross out with other trees, and they got resistant trees out, and they were growing them there. But we want to increase the world production. See, that's the other problem. There's not enough hazelnuts. It's a shortage. So you want to grow them in the eastern United States. But if you bring that resistant tree back to the eastern United States, the resistance doesn't hold up. There's different races of EFB over here. So we've been trying to find novel sources of resistance, taking germplasm from all over the world. I'm working with Turkish and Latvian germplasm, phenotyping that for disease resistance. So you have to combine all that resistance together and also find something with good nut quality, good horticultural traits. And you got to put that all in one tree so that you have a crop for the eastern United States.
And so your research, it must be really exciting to get to work on a crop that a lot of people probably don't know about or really have any awareness of, despite the fact that hazelnuts get consumed quite a bit.
So while it may not be a major crop, it is certainly a very versatile crop and a very useful crop. So there's lots of oils and really interesting flavor compounds in it. And the biggest thing that we're pushing for is that it's a low input crop. What we're envisioning for this project is to produce an EFB resistant tree with good nut quality that people can plant on small farms, or weekend farmers can use it. It's low input, you don't need a whole lot of fertilizer, barely any spraying, very low maintenance. You can have it, work on it on the weekends, and just put some time in during harvest season, and you can still turn a profit for it. So it helps improve profitability for small scale farmers or even large producers.
Do you eat a lot of Nutella yourself?
I eat a reasonable amount of Nutella. In the winter, when we're doing a lot of our analysis, we end up roasting the hazelnuts for part of it to see if the pellicle, that's the fibery coating, comes off of the nut. So it smells really great, but when you eat a couple thousand of them, you take a break from Nutella in the winter. But in the summer, I'll have some Nutella.
When we talked before our interview, you mentioned you love plant breeding because it mixes science, technology, and art. Can you describe for me where the art lies in plant breeding, especially regarding hazelnut breeding?
Absolutely. So as you can imagine, hazelnuts are not a fast-growing crop. Our shortest intergenerational time is about 5 years from seed to when we're getting valuable disease and yield data. So in such a long-term crop like that, you need to really be good at planning, but you also have to have this sense of your germplasm. You have to know it really well. You have to be able to tell what's worthwhile, what's not worthwhile, what's worth keeping, and what you should get rid of. So it's a lot of decision-making based off of your observations. And the other part of the art is working with people. So you're setting up these projects that you won't be there to see the result of. You know, you might have to wait months or years or decades before you get any sort of meaningful data out of it. So you're working with other people towards this sort of common goal, and it's just for the good of the process and good of the project.
The reason we're sitting down here together is because we're in Pine Mountain, Georgia for the 2019 meeting of the National Association of Plant Breeders. You're a Borlaug Scholar. Congratulations. How does being one of the Borlaug Scholars help you further your career and the good work that you're doing in plant breeding?
So one of the biggest things is when I got here, there's not a whole lot of horticultural breeders here. A lot of them are big agronomic breeders. They're breeding corn, wheat, and soybeans, and all these major food crops. And it's been really interesting because I don't have a whole lot of exposure to that. So I've been talking with these people and meeting with them, mingling with them, and learning a whole lot about what they do, teaching them about what I do. And the biggest thing it's done is that it's helped me create context. And I think that's a really important thing for any sort of project. Anyone working in the agriculture or food industry is to have context with what you're doing, how your science is going to affect the world, and how the world is going to affect your science.
Tell me a little bit about your mentor. As a part of the Borlaug Scholarship Program, each scholar is paired with a mentor. Who is your mentor? And you probably haven't had a chance to work with him or her a lot as of yet, but what's it like to work with them?
So Dr. Emilio Oyarzabal, he works for Bayer, and he's finding students that are really promising in the plant science community, and he's helping them to shape their educational careers and maybe helping them to integrate their skill set into a more industry-focused setting. And that's exciting for me because I've always pictured myself as a very academia-oriented breeder, so I've been doing a lot of my work in a college, and I really enjoy that. But I think having exposure to the more industrial side, once again, it's giving you that context. It's helping you to realize what the world is looking for and how money is going to play a factor in these sort of things, and how larger companies really are a critical part of our current food system as we know it. And Dr. Oyarzabal has been helping students to integrate with that, whether they can see if they like it or if they don't like it. Both are a valuable outcome of the experience.
Thanks so much for sitting down with me.
Well, thank you for having me.